Okay, at this time I'm supposed to briefly qualify. Requirements for chairing a meeting at Central Orlando Group Saturday night speaking meeting are 1 year of continuous sobriety, have Central as your home group, and attend a group conscious meeting. And I meet all those requirements. And I'm really glad to be here. It's great to have this opportunity, and I'm very grateful to be sober today. It's only through the grace of God in this program. The group has asked me to remind you to please make sure your phones are off and refrain from moving around or talking while the speaker is sharing. And at this point, I'm going to introduce the speaker. The speaker I chose tonight is Brian L. I chose him because I see him doing the deal. You know, I see him around here a lot. I know that he's really involved in a lot of service work, and service work can take a lot of different kind of meetings, a lot of pictures, different pictures, you know, even from making the coffee or greeting the newcomer to... We had a little incident here before the meeting started, and he was definitely helping out with that. So I want to give him the full time to give him the opportunity to share his story, and I'm really looking forward. And I introduce to you Brian Little.
I'm Brian Little. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Brian.
My sobriety date's April 23rd, 1989. Thank you. Whew, a little nervous here. So it doesn't matter if you have 22 years, one day, doing the fourth step, doing the ninth step, scared to death, it's okay. But let's put being scared to death in perspective. You know, some of you know that there's a lady in this room celebrating 30 years continuous sobriety, that'd be Betty D. And right now, she's in the hospital and she's being pounded by radiation and chemo every day. So as Brent would say, get out of your cheap self. So it's an honor and a pleasure to be up here. What it was like, what happened, what it's like now. I'm still, my heart's a little pumping from extracurricular activities before the meeting, so please forgive me. But you know what? For the grace of God, there go I. Just a man who's sick that needs help. You know, so if any of you saw that, that could be one of us. And grew up California, mom, dad, I was the oldest, sister, brother, and I know what I can remember from growing up. Everything was provided for. You know, it's funny, as the older we get in sobriety, you know, I had a great family. You first get in here, oh, mom, dad, oh, no, no. Well, you know what, mom and dad were there. Provided for me, a roof over my head, braces, school, clothes, love, support. But you know what? Ever since I can remember, I felt different. I felt unique. Something was wrong. Couldn't picture it. And you know, I had things in life that, you know, helped kind of reinforce that. And, you know, like I said, I had the last name a little. So all the way through high school, I was 5'2", 90 pounds, hair parted down the side, lazy eye. I was what you call a pure geek. And, you know, everybody harassed me about it growing up, which they do in school. Chicken Little, every name you could think of, I was called. You know, now it's like, go ahead, call me Chicken Little now. And things like, I hadn't hit puberty yet. I'm on the swim team, polo team, you know, in a Speedo, not hitting puberty kind of sucks. Let's just say, you know, I had, you know, I'd cry to my mom and she would just give me a hug and she'd say, you know what, I love you. Everything's going to be okay. But I didn't hear that. That didn't help. You know, I would be, and things like, all the way through junior high school, there, I can still remember this. Of course, I've made peace with them. But Gloria and Judy Jimenez, the most beautifulest girls all through junior high and high school, well, they used to like to beat me up all the way home from school. And the whole school would come, follow. And they'd always be beating on me. And, you know, I was taught by my dad, the first time this happened, my dad says, you never lay a hand on them. You be a better man and you walk away. But, you know, when you're 5'2", 90 pounds, hair parted down the side, you know, the geek, and these women are picking on you, making fun of you, I'll tell you, that self-esteem just went to crap. So I go home and tell my dad that, and he says, you know what, you're a good man for doing what you did. but I couldn't see that. You know, it just felt different, unique. And, of course, doing pretty good at school. And what happened is some neighbor kids came over. And I didn't have my first drink till I was 17. And what happened, my dad was a drinker, and he had the an old console TV that he gutted out and made into a bar. And I had these little opening doors, and the neighbor kid said, "Let's have a drink." And I thought, I never thought of it. I said, "Great idea." So he poured me a vodka and a grapefruit juice, and I took that drink. And when they talk about in that book, that moment of perfection, the world is perfect, when I took that drink, when it hit my stomach, I was king, I was Superman, I was perfect for that split second. And until I got into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, that's what I chased. And I never did one of these foo-foo drinks where you had one and then left. After that, I drank until God brought me to these rooms. And what happened is, right after that perfection, I continued to chase that. But I'm telling you, I can still remember it to this day, a split second of just perfect. I didn't feel 5'2", 90 pounds. I didn't feel like the geek. I didn't feel like, you know, anybody could beat me up. Just for that second. So I found a solution. That was alcohol. Well, of course, you know what alcohol does to us alcoholics. And what I did is I lied, cheated, and stole. Ran away from home. I was a shitty son. And one day, I threatened my mother. And in our household, you didn't threaten anybody. So my dad says, "You have a choice. You can either join the military or get out of the house." Well, I'll join the military. Good idea. Well, because I'd been doing other accelerants besides the alcohol, you know, my brain wasn't working too well. So when you do a placement test for the military, if you place well, you get a good position. Well, I didn't place too well. So they said, "Brian, the openings we have is a cook and a tanker." And I thought, I am not cooking. And so I became a tanker. And what happened is, living in California, there's no such thing as humidity. So in July, I went to Fort Knox, Kentucky, and I got off the plane, and I know what humidity is today. And I got off that plane, and I wanted to cry. And what the great thing about the military is I'm grateful for that experience, because it taught me to learn to be responsible for a little while. Because of basic training in AIT, you really can't drink a whole lot. But we did find in the barracks that was there is they had these Coke machines that were Budweiser machines. 50 cents, get a Budweiser. So in AIT, we snuck off. Everybody got quarters, and the laundry bags we filled up with Budweiser cans. It was probably $30 worth of quarters, emptied the machine. Of course, we got caught for that. And, you know, lots of punishment, you know, push-ups, solitary confinement, cleaning toilets. But that's what, after that first drink, all I could think about was, when can I get the next drink? So what happened is they sent all the single men to Germany and all the married men to Korea. Well, Korea is a hardship tour, so, you know, married, you know, they can't bring the spouses. So we went to Germany. Yay, I'm all excited. Well, the military teaches you how to drink. Enlisted club, 50 cent drinks. All day, all night long. As long as you do what you're doing. So I did a lot of drinking. And what happened, I did a lot of other activities. And 52 days before I was supposed to get out, they decided to let me go. Should have been dishonorable discharge, but they gave me honorable. Because I was a shitty soldier. All I cared about was drinking and getting in trouble. And so I come home for about a month. I remember my sister picking me up from the Los Angeles airport, and she goes, "Jesus, look, you're fat and out of shape." Well, it was from all the booze. You know, I wasn't eating right or anything. So I came home for a month. And I thought, this place sucks. So I went back to Europe. Lived in Europe for 2 years. Traveled and drank alcohol. Tell you what, if you want to learn how to drink, you go to Europe. And what happens in certain parts in Europe, they love Americans. So they'll give you all free drinks just to talk to you. And so at one time, my sister and mom were supposed to come out. They had plane tickets, everything to come out. And what I did is I did a special geographic. I had burned all the bridges. And I had to use those tickets, the money, to combine it to one to come back. because I'd burned all the bridges. Caused some harm, little legal stuff here and there, so I had to leave Europe. And what happened is I came back and got a job. I never had a problem with getting a job. 2 days I've been out of work my whole life. See, us alcoholics know how to work if we want to. But I always was working so I could get that next drink, that next thing, that next action. And what happened, my best friend in Vegas said, "Hey, Brian, why don't you come stay with me?" Las Vegas, I'll tell you. So what happened is I got a job at Kmart for the first couple months. My best friend growing up with, he loved to drink, but he was a normal drinker. He could put one down after one or two drinks and say, "Let's go, Brian." I'd be like, "No way, I just got started." So I ended up getting a job with the motion picture and film industry. And all the movies and commercials shot in Vegas went through our office. Well, I got the job. I'm about 22 years old. And what I did is all the movies and commercials that came in, I would take them around to get the locations and set everything up. Well, when people come to Vegas, let's just say they're not real spiritual. And what I did is I provided lots of alcohol and lots of other illegal activities for them. So what happens, I would work for the state in the daytime, and this is the arrogance and the cockiness of me. I'm 21, 22 years old. I'm in a three-piece Armani suit. They give me a 88 Mustang convertible. They give me $30,000 a year, and then all these film companies are paying me at nighttime. You know, they want their other things, the women and the other stuff. And all I cared about, what was in it for me. You know, I would send them on their way after they're done, and I'd have my leftover stuff and my drinks and my money, and that was it. And what happened is when you're 21, 22 years old and you're working with the union in Las Vegas, you can really piss some people off. And because of my arrogance, my cockiness, I'd tell these union people to go F themselves. They're lucky they got a job through me. I should be right now buried in the desert somewhere in Vegas. But because of God's grace, I'm here today. And what happened is I gave away that job because of alcohol. Everything was more important than alcohol. So what happened, this last job real quick, was I was working for a plumbing company with a jackhammer, trenching out drains for pools in the desert. Well, if any of you know, in Las Vegas, it's all rock. And so I would work all week, and then I'd already given away everything else. But I'll say, right before I got evicted from my apartment, you know, they were taking the rent of furniture away, they were taking the vehicle, all this stuff. And I had a moment of clarity. I went into the bathroom, and I said, "God, I can't do this anymore." And I had the white light experience. Just for 1 second, I knew it was going to be okay. I don't know how, I don't know when. But of course, you know, I'm not in that place anymore, and I'm at the Thunderbird Motel, which is not there anymore. I'm playing, this is my last drunk. I'm playing dollar video poker, $500 in my pocket. I'm thinking I'm going to just play a little bit and have a couple drinks. Next thing I know, I wake up from a blackout in the hotel room. Some girl next to me, she said, "I had a great time." I look and I have no money and I don't remember a thing. To this day, I do not remember what happened from like 10 o'clock at night till 8 o'clock that next morning. That's alcohol. Blackout. I could have been killed, stabbed. I don't know if she got the money. I don't know if I spent it. I just don't know. One more time, the insanity. So I looked in my wallet and I had a spare key to my ex-employer's truck. It was at McCarran International Airport. I decided to take a little drive and without him knowing it. So what I did is I went from Las Vegas to Hesperia, California, stole his truck, went to my cousin's house. And I didn't know at the time, my cousin was 6 years sober at the time. I was thinking of either robbing a 7-Eleven or going to my cousin's house. God's grace got me to my cousin's house. I knock on the door and I said to him, "Hey, John," and he goes, "You're an angry SOB." He goes, "Do you want help?" And I go, "I don't care at this point." So I go in there and he calls my dad, and my dad and him were tight, and my dad gets on the phone and he's crying. He says, "We're going to give you a bus ticket. Come on home." So I go home, and you know, my parents have always done the right thing. So I had created a few felonies and other things in Las Vegas. So the first thing my dad says, and my mom, is that you need to do the right thing and turn yourself in. Well, remember, I had that spiritual awakening at that apartment I got evicted from. So I was at that place, and I said, okay, so we said all the goodbyes, everybody's crying, and my mom gives me a toothbrush for whatever reason, but she gave me a toothbrush. So I go back to Santa Maria. I didn't know anything about, you know, long-term prison, so I knew lots of stints about weekends. So I go in there, and my sister takes me. So I go and give him the officer, you know, it's the big glass thing, slide in the driver's license, and I go, sir, I've committed a lot of felonies in the state of Nevada. Did a lot of bad stuff. And he says, okay, let me take a look. About 2 hours goes back, he pushes that license back, and he says, we don't have anything on you.
Yeah.
We got a second chance in life. So what happened right after that, at this time, God's working in my life way beforehand that I don't know this, because my mom's been working with a woman who was 12 years sober at the time. Her name is Sandy. She's still sober to this day. So as I come back, my mom and dad are surprised, like, what's he doing back? He's supposed to be going to prison. You know, Grand Theft Auto. And by the way, just to let you know how the miracle is, when the gentleman who owned the truck went to start it, it ran out of gas. He dropped the charges. But that's how God got me there. I ended up running out on fumes. So God's got all this planned way before me. That's the arrogance that I had. So my mom says, you need to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. I said, I'll do whatever. Because after that, going into the jail there, and they said, you got a second chance of life. I'm like, okay, something's going on here. So I go to the first meeting, 1600 Club in Santa Maria, California. And they had a gentleman greeting at the door. That's why I love how we greet here. And he's an old homeless guy that used to play the accordion. And he had cheap suit on, cheap fat tie on, and he shook my hand and he said, welcome home. And you know, for the first time in my life, those gears inside clicked. This is where I belong. And you know, back then, it's a little different than sobriety today. They all welcomed me and everything, but one guy came up to me and I could see the smile in their eyes. That's what I call it, the smile, the peace, smile in their eyes. And they said, if you want what we have, you'll do what we do, period. If you want to go drink, that's your business. If you want to stay sober, that's ours. And they didn't take any shit. You know, I'm a little cocky, you know, 24-year-old SOB. So, you know, my first thing, they assign you a sponsor there, and it's sponsoring pretty much a spouse, so they're both sponsors. And they said, sit down and shut up. So I get in there, and I think the first couple days, you know, I got some great things to say. So I raise my hand, and this old-timer across the room, 30 years sober, says, shut up, boy, you don't know what you're talking about. Right in the middle of the meeting. I went to a lot of meetings on resentments. But I am grateful for those men and women today because they were telling me the truth. Because, you know, if I am so damn smart, how come I'm in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous? I don't know nothing, but I think I know everything. So what happened? They got me on the steps right away. You know, 1, 2, and 3 is pretty simple. Now, you know, I like to do this here. One, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. I didn't understand that. Now today I do with a sponsor. What it means is when I take that first drink, I don't know what's going to happen. Might as well go down to the sheriff's station and say, put me in handcuffs. Because I usually black out and I do really stupid things. The second part is, our lives have become manageable. I thought that was the outside stuff. The girl, the house, the car, the money. My sponsor said, no, you dumbass. That's on the inside. He says, you're dead on the inside. That's the unmanageability. See, I'm grateful for my sponsor because he told me the truth every day. He didn't care what I thought or felt. He said, what are you doing? What action are you doing today? He'd call me up in the middle of the night and say, be outside in 10 minutes before I could say, huh, what? We did 12-step calls. You know, today I'm so grateful that he allowed me to be a part of that. You know, we'd go work with wet drunks. And he says, it doesn't matter if they stay sober. He said, you stayed sober. You know, step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Well, duh, I knew I was insane. Doing the same thing over and over, expecting different results. You know, I'm just not going to have one. I'm just going to have two. Black out, do the same things. Wake up in jail. Same thing. Nothing changed. You know, step three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over the care of God as we understood Him. My sponsor said is, God will contact you somewhere through these 12 steps. All it says is you're willing to do the rest of the steps. You know, today I like to say that understanding God is way above my pay grade. You know, if I want to learn about God, I go to religious studies or seminary. I just know God works, because look at, you're all here Saturday night, sober. Some of you are happy, some of you aren't, but you're here. But the thing is, it works. You see the smile in your eyes. You see your lives change. That's God working. And that's how I got to know God, was through you people. You know, the men and women in the rooms when I was new would put their arms around me and say, "Are you okay today?" You know, step four made a searching and thorough moral inventory of ourselves. Well, you know how us alcoholics are. You know, I got new, good looking, clean cut, everything. I know all the answers. And I saw a girl. And, you know, I'm like, I did the four step, but, you know, I put it away because I, you know, me and her were perfect for each other. You know how we are in the rooms here. Oh, God, you just don't understand. She's just perfect. White picket fence, 3.2 kids, you know. Some of you are in here now going, how does he know? So what happened is I put it away in a drawer. And she'd come over. And I'd come home from work and she said, "I read your four step." And I got on the phone with my sponsor. I'm like, "She read my four step." He goes, "Good, are you ready to do your fifth?" I was there the next day. He put his arms around him. Bill, I can remember. Put his arms around like this. And he said, "Okay, go ahead, boy." Always call me boy. And I used to always say, he always used to call us, you know, us guys, pigeons. And I said, "I hate when you call me a pigeon." He says, "Okay, you're a duck." You know, I wanted to be unique and special. He was trying to carry the message. And sometimes I just wasn't listening. So what I did is I told him the truth. I told him the things I was going to the grave with. You know, those deep, dark secrets we're not going to tell anybody. And for the first time in my life, I was free. I always consider it like in the military, you have these big duffel bags on your back, and I've been carrying one of those all my life. And when I told him everything, that duffel bag dropped away. And he looked at me and goes, "Is that it?" Back then, they weren't as soft as some of them are today. They want life and death. "This thing will kill you." I said, "Yes, sir." He said, "Good." So he went through the rest of the part where we talked about putting the, you know, for an hour. Go over the first five proposals. Have you done everything correctly? And then he had me call him. And he said, "Okay, read the steps 6 and 7. Just very short in the big book. But that's where the work is right there, 6 and 7 for me. So I did those. He said, "Good." He said, "Start the 8th step. I'm like, "Well, how do I do that?" He goes, "You dumbass, it's from your 4th step. You know, I was so slow on a lot of this stuff. This is how I had to be talked to. I know some of you are really sensitive in here, but I had to be talked to that way so it would get me to listen. I think God put sponsors and sponsees together for a reason. And if I had somebody soft and easy, I wouldn't be here today. And I did the 8-step list, and then he went over the list to make sure, you know, those people that you gave money to and they never came back for it, you don't have to make amends to those people. But he had me make 2 lists. First was to the people, and what happened is, because of my superstar lifestyle before I got in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I racked up $40,000 worth of stolen credit cards, bad checks, stealing, everything else. And so I had a financial list too. But the first one was, is he said, "You make a phone call," and he never wanted me to use the word sorry, because I'm a sorry SOB anyways. He wanted me to amend it with character defects. I lied, cheated, stole. And then what can I do to set things right? And whatever they said to do, I did. First of all, most people said, "We're just glad you're not drinking. We are so grateful. Just keep doing the right thing." One guy said, I'll tell you why this works, because one guy said, who I believe will do this, he says, "If I see you again, I'll kill you." And I'm still here today. So I went through that list, and I made amends to all those people. And then also says, it talks about be willing, because 15 years after I was sober, somebody called me from Europe, and I remember to make those amends. Set things right. And I'll tell you what, if you haven't done the 9th step or the 5th step yet, I was set free. Those promises are true about the 9th step. So I did that financial thing, and of course, you know, I have that career, you know, stellar career, you know, I should be a CEO and everything else. Well, for the first 5 years in sobriety, I was a gas station attendant. I worked in a cabinet shop. I was a laborer. I was a roofer. I was a landscaper. My sponsor didn't care what job I did. He was wanting to know if I was paying those people back. So what he had me do is get a credit report and pay three people at a time, $5 a pop, till I got them paid off. As I'm doing the work, making amends, financial amends, I'm getting better jobs where I'm making more money to pay more people off. I go to my mom whining, and she has 30 years in the bank business. And I go, those big corporations don't worry about my stolen credit cards. She goes, did you know people like us own stock in those companies? And when you steal from them, we don't get as much back on our stock? I never thought of that. And for those people who I amended to, I never thought about, why do I need to make amends to those people? Did you ever think of maybe closing the chapter in their life, what they could have done better? Because a lot of people tried to help me. So when I went to them and said I had this disease and the things I did to them, it closed the chapter in their life because they tried the best they could to help me. It brought them peace. See, this is not about me when I'm doing these amends. You know? So what happened after 7 years, I paid all those people off. Every one of them. So if you do the easier, softer way on the ninth step, it'll be troubles of your own making. Let's just put it that way. And I whined and pissed and moaned because, oh, I can't go to a convention. I can't buy this car. I can't buy that. My sponsor said, I don't care. You'll pay those people back. They want their money. And you know what? I am so grateful for that man today. Step 10, continue to take personal inventory. And when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. I do step 10 every day, but I don't always promptly admit it. But what happens, it'll eat at me on the inside. And I do make amends, sometimes slowly, sometimes quickly, but that's so it doesn't build up and I get those resentments and I want to start assaulting people or doing extracurricular activities. You know, I want to be peaceful. And you know what? I do a lot of troubles of my own making to this day. I am not a saint, I never will be, and I don't want to be. But you know what? I've got peace for most of the time. 11, continue to take personal inventory when we're wrong, promptly admit. I'm sorry. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge, for His will for us, the power to carry that out. I pray all the time to God. And how I listen, I don't do the sit down. I'm not, you know, I might make a joke of this. Please don't take offense. But I don't sit there and go kumbaya for 3 hours during the daytime. What I do is when I'm working, driving, during the day, I talk to God. And then what happens, I get quiet and I listen. And if you truly listen, He'll give you the answer. Step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and practice these principles in all our affairs. It says, having had a spiritual awakening. It didn't say maybe, kind of, sort of. If you do these steps, you'll be contacted. I love this step today. I had the honor and pleasure of working with men, taking them through the steps, and watching them get the smile in their eyes. To me, that is the gift. So if you haven't sponsored it, first finish the steps, and then get that opportunity to sponsor people. It is the greatest gift ever. And what's the great thing about sponsoring men is I get to go through the book again, and again, and again. You know, the great thing is today, when things are going great, I pray. I go to meetings. I work with others. I do service work. When things are going bad, I pray. I go to meetings. I do service work and work with others. What does God ask from me? A couple hours a day for the greatest life ever? You know, I got some great stories here to tell. I always like about the appendix, the spiritual appendix, because it says in there, contempt prior to investigation. I have a lot of contempt prior to investigation. And the reason why, one example is I work in the telecommunications business and I do service calls and telecommunications. And DSL was rolling out. And they said, all the people from corporate are coming in. Everybody's got to have somebody to ride with them. And I'm like, F that. I am not having no SOB riding with me. I mean, I'm just fighting up a storm. And they decided to put the vice president with me. Great. Don't they know who I am? So what happens? This is how God works. This is why I say contempt prior to investigation. The gentleman gets in. We do all the work in the morning, DSL stuff. And he says, let me take you to lunch. So we go to Wendy's. And as he's paying for the meal, these medallions come out of his pocket. So I thought, aha. So we sit down and I go, hey, what are those medallions for? He's like, oh, nothing, nothing. So I screw with him a little bit. And then I finally say, you're a friend of Bill W's. He said, yes. So we talked a little bit. And then in the afternoon, we got ready to go back to work. And he gets a phone call from his doctor. His doctor called him to tell him he had prostate cancer. So first of all, God put a guy from Kansas City, alcoholic, 25 years sober at the time, with a yo-yo alcoholic, that'd be me, in Orlando, Florida, put us together. This wasn't even about me. And I said, is there anything I can do? And he said, no, you just being here. Well, future update, the man has no prostate cancer, is living happily ever after. But that's how God works, if I get out of the way. You know, some other examples are, you know, we make this amend process to our family, our friends. It's time. We don't say, hey, we're sorry, I'm going to do better. It's action. Action, action, action. Everybody hasn't heard that from me before. And I got to make living amends to my parents to this day. And the great thing was about, I don't know, 7 years ago, I had the opportunity to fly my parents out first class from California, take them on a 10-day vacation trip all the way up down the West Coast and up the East Coast in Florida. Because of Alcoholics Anonymous, because of the work, because of the steps, I got to do that for my parents. You know, I remember I used to, you know, when I first got sober, three months, my dad drank a lot. So I said, here, Dad, you need this. And he goes, you know where you can stick that book. But what the miracle is by the action is 6 months after I stopped drinking, doing the action, my dad stopped drinking. And what he said to me is, he said, son, he goes, I was never a great father to you kids, but your sister's pregnant and I'd love to be a great grandfather. He said, is that okay with you? We made peace. You know, it's funny, on that resentment I had on my dad. Oh, I hate my dad. He didn't go to my ball games. He didn't do any of the things I wanted him to do. Well, selfish self-centeredness. My dad worked 60 and 80 hours a week to provide cleats, helmets, gloves, provide a roof over my head, braces, shoes. That's the kind of thinking. My perception of thinking screwed up. You know, and so if you're new and you have all the answers, good luck, because you don't. But what happens, we here in Alcoholics Anonymous with experience, because of the book of Alcoholics Anonymous and our sponsors before, we'll share that with you. And if you're willing to do the deal, we'll go to any lengths with you. But if you're not, go do what the book says, try some controlled drinking. And then if you can admit to your innermost self, you're one of us, come on, we'll help you. Another miracle is just about, I think, a month ago, my mom calls up on a Thursday and she said, oh, just to let you know, your father had to go into surgery, everything's okay. Still to this day, my mother worries that if bad news comes, I might drink. And that's 22 years later. I'm still her 16-year-old kid. So what I did find out is my dad had emergency surgery for his appendix being out. Had to be taken out because it was getting ready to explode. Perforated. Is that the right word, Jim? Okay. And gangrene. So what happened is I prayed about it, and I'm like, I need to go see my dad. What happened is I was able to find a plane ticket for almost the same price as 21-day advance. This is one-day notice. And everything else fell into place. So I told my mom. I told her not to tell anybody else. So I go out there, and of course, first thing my sister says is, what the hell are you doing here? You know, my sister and my brother, unfortunately, belong in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I have no power over that. All I can do is pray for them. My brother says the same thing. So we go to the hospital, and I see my dad, and I lean over to give him a hug, and he wouldn't let go. That's all I ever wanted from my dad. And you know, and I've had it all the time. And I said, Dad, are you surprised? And he goes, no, son, I knew you'd be here. That's because of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's not because of me. Oh, God, I got to spend the money, waste my time, go see my dad. I mean, that's what I thought when I drank. You know what I could get for that money? Drinking and partying? But because of you people, that's what you gave me. To be a responsible son that I was always supposed to be in the first place. I have a great relationship with my folks. So if you have hard times with your family now, if you do the work, I promise you, things will be different. It takes time. My parents didn't trust me in their house till I was 4 years sober. With them in it. Because I lied, cheated, and stole, and I would look right to their face and say, I didn't take that $20 from you, Dad. Of course, he only had $20 in his wallet, and I was the only one in the house. I'm a bad liar, too. You know, I've had some great miracles here. Jim and I were part of one. What happened is we went and celebrated Jim's birthday. You're 32, Jim? Okay. Joe and I showed up. What happened? We went to it, did a little surprise for him, carrying a message to each other, and this woman comes up, and she said, "Are you friends of Bill Wilson?" And of course, the comedian over here, Joe, says, "Who's Bill Wilson?" And we said, "Yes, of course he is." And she come back and she said, "You know, I used to be 7 years sober at this time, and I think I'm now 7 months." And we told her about all the women here in Central and this great group. And she goes, "You know, it'd be really nice to have somebody to talk to." That's the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous. See, if you don't show up, you don't know what's going to happen. You know, gifts in this room. I have a great job today because of Alcoholics Anonymous. But you also have to do the work. If I keep doing what I'm doing, in 3 weeks, if I survive, I'll have my master's degree because of Alcoholics Anonymous. If I survive the 3 weeks. I never thought I'd go to college. You know, the gift also is I've been married in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. We have some great days and we have some bad days. But no matter what, I don't drink. You know, no matter what, I don't drink. I have a sponsor that I still call twice a week. And he still tells me, I go up to him with plan A and plan B. You know what he says to me? "Do you ever think of plan C?" Because my perception and thinking screwed up. I never think of plan C. I'm like, why didn't I think of that? Because, you know, he'll say a few words that I won't repeat here. But what he's doing is telling me the truth because my perception and thinking screwed up. You know, so if you're new, please do the work. Please do the work. And miracles will happen. And I am grateful to be sober. Thank you for letting me share.